Real stories, reliable information, the latest technology and news. Welcome to the Plastic Surgery Hub podcast, connecting people with practitioners.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Transforming Bodies podcast again. And tonight I'm here with the lovely Dr. Matthew Peters, who's from Valley Plastic Surgery. He's a specialist plastic surgeon and they're based in Fortitude Valley. And tonight we're going to talk about something a little bit different. So we're normally talking about one procedure or one treatment. So tonight we're going to actually talk about a variety of treatments and they're termed like extremities or the other unknown procedures. So we're going to talk about the different types there might be and a little bit about them. So welcome, Dr. Peters.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us again. So tell me, like, you know, every surgery, you know, has its own, you know, it's serious, of course, and they all have their own, I guess, dangers or for want of a better word, that you can help us with. But, like, why are some more, have a higher level of risk than others?
There's a number of factors that we've got to take into account when it comes to the areas that we're operating in. And certainly it's a combination of the tissues, how much we need to take, what sort of blood supply we're dealing with, whether we're going to be introducing something new, such as an implant. There's just a number of factors that need to be taken into account when working out what the danger or risk of a procedure is, and they need to be thought of very thoroughly in advance to try and minimise that danger and to still achieve an outcome that everyone's happy with.
Yeah, okay. And what do you reckon is one of the most, or well, actually for me myself, like I'll pretty much, you know, I really like having surgery that's going to make me better, but some particular surgeries kind of freak me out, you know, like just the thought of it. And one of them is one on the list that we've got to talk about tonight. Actually, there's three out of four that freak me out. And one of them is the brachioplasty, which is the arm lift. So what makes that one more sort of, you know, what is that one all about and why has it got a high level of risk or has it got a high level of risk?
I don't think it's got a high level of risk if you just know your anatomy and you know what sort of limitations you've got to think about in terms of what you can achieve. It's a really good operation for achieving what it is just taking away all the extra skin and a component of fat within the upper arm. And this is a really troublesome area for lots of women, lots of men, lots of people that are either born that way, have put weight on, or have gone through massive weight loss. And they've got a concern there and they want it tidied up. And the anatomy of the arm is essentially a multi-layered sausage. You've got the bone in the middle of it, then you've got the muscles around it, and then there's a bunch of things in there that are all the nerves and blood vessels that supply the hand. And that's probably the biggest risk issue, is knowing that anatomy, knowing where it is, and then trying to design a surgical plan that means that the risk to those structures is as low as you can possibly make it. If you affect the blood supply to the hand, you can run into all sorts of trouble in terms of loss of muscle, loss of function, loss of everything. That can mean very extensive surgery moving forward. If you damage the nerves, that can have significant implications for how someone can function long term and can necessitate further procedures, all sorts of things, rehabilitation and the like to actually restore function. So these are things that I haven't had happen in my personal career. They're things that I have seen or heard of. They're things that when you analyse the cases where they have occurred, it's a decision-making situation. It's a concept of what might be achieved or what someone's trying to achieve and executing it in a way where it just wasn't done exactly with a safe plan in mind.
Yeah, actually, I've heard of, not necessarily the brachioplasty, but I have heard a couple of situations where there's been like kind of nerve damage or whether it's how someone, like, actually, I'm just guessing here, would that be how either someone was lying or could something have just kind of been pressed against and someone not known, or it's just...
That sort of stuff's a bit different in that... Certainly how someone lies during an operation, as in how they're resting on a bed, a surgical bed, is a really important part of the surgical setup. So putting someone off to sleep and getting them prepped so that they're sterile, so that we've got a low infection risk, so that we've got everything, you know, airways secure, body parts secured, everything. Part of that is also looking at where the elbows are lying, where the knees are lying, how the arms are positioned, so that we don't have pointy parts of beds, we don't have arms stretched out in funny ways, thighs stretched out in funny ways, where essentially you can put a lot of pressure or traction on nerves and essentially render them not functional. They can be significantly damaged, and that can have big implications short term, but also be a permanent problem. So pressure area checks at the start of every operation, especially in the massive weight loss or longer procedures, is an essential part of a surgical checklist, and is done with every case that I'm involved with to make sure that people are safe.
It's pretty scary.
It's a bit different to surgical nerve injury due to, you know, not taking into account where the nerves might be, the layers that are involved, thinking about a surgical plan that might be just on the edge of mainstream, or just pushing it to that next level to try and address an area that a patient's concerned about. And, you know, plastic surgery, a lot of it is the toolbox with 17,000 tricks, and you've got to try and apply them, but you've got to apply them properly and well. And you've got to think of the anatomy, and if you don't marry those things up well, you can run into trouble.
Yeah, it's sort of it is you got to tick all your boxes, I suppose, or I guess that's the benefit to going someone who's properly qualified and does a lot of that procedure, I guess, because you just got your process and it's just like, you know, bang, 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 I suppose, from a patient's point of view. So tell me, what other, like the thigh reduction, because you can combine some procedures, but would you do a brachioplasty in a thigh, or otherwise you probably wouldn't actually, because then you've got your arms and your legs kind of where you can't do anything.
That's an operation combo that I do actually, and it's surprising. The arms themselves, when they're done right, people don't really have a lot of trouble in terms of using their hands, using their upper limbs to do things. Certainly there's restrictions we put in place so that they don't get too physical and too active. I certainly don't want patients running to the gym to do bicep curls 3 days post-op.
Yeah.
But in terms of that activities of daily living and just eating, drinking, doing hair, getting dressed, all that sort of stuff, helping out around the home a little bit, the arms are actually pretty good. As are the thighs. All of my patients get up the next day to mobilize with a physiotherapist. They're sore, and it's not like they're running marathons, but they're actually able to do quite a lot. And there's little restrictions we put in place regarding how they sit and how they toilet and things like that, but they are relatively mobile and functional. Certainly not to the point where they're anywhere near normal, but certainly enough so that they can keep themselves going and look after basic functions.
Yeah,
right. So, yeah, that combo is not rare. The thigh lift procedure, in terms of risk profiles and danger aspects of that, it is a bit of a tricky operation, especially in someone who has a lot of residual fat component to their actual thighs. The underlying anatomy, the structures you have to worry about, all relate to the lymphatics of the leg. And if you get into the area where you affect the lymphatic drainage of the leg, you can cause lymphedema. Mm-hmm. And that can be a nightmare. It can be something that patients have to live with for the rest of their lives. They can need all sorts of compression stockings and all sorts of things like that. So you've got to be very careful about where you are operating to minimize that risk. There's lots of blood vessels. There's lots of superficial nerves. There's things like that which, if planned properly, it's okay. And the procedure can be quite a smooth one. I tend to do my thigh reductions from the medial aspect of the thigh, and then there's a T-junction sort of thing quite commonly at the top, and that can be an area where we get some skin breakdown. Surprisingly, that wound actually heals really fast and pretty well, but it is one of the ones where T-junction-wise, it's at a higher risk of breakdown than I think any of the other T-junction procedures that we have. But, yeah, if you stick to those sorts of things compared to thinking about or if you're looking at lateral-based procedures or other things like that, there are some other structures in other parts of the thighs that you do have to be careful about. Well-planned, usually they're not a concern, but there are other nerves you have to be careful around. The area below the knee is tricky, and that's something where calf reduction surgery or lymph liposuction of areas below the calf, below the knee, they are high-risk zones when it comes to the potential for DVT. So having a deep vein thrombosis or blood clot that can break off, go to the lungs and be fatal. And certainly I view anything that's sort of below the knee as being of a higher risk. And so it's something to do the risk-benefit calculation with the patient, weigh up the situation at hand, what the potential outcomes are likely to be in terms of safety and benefit, and case-by-case basis when it's below the knee.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned below the knee, I've very recently a lady came to me and she was looking for someone to do – she actually had lymphedema, and she was looking for someone to do liposuction below the knee, but she found it impossible during her search to find someone because, yeah, it's so high – risk, and I'm not quite sure when she want to have done, but she found it very difficult to find someone because of the high risk.
It is a for lymphedema, it's got to be, there's different types of lymphedema, and for some of the subtypes liposuction can be of benefit. There's other procedures with excision, and then there's a lot of new surgical stuff happening in terms of super microsurgery. This is all happening in big centres that are looking at making it sort of a multidisciplinary type approach. I know that Macquarie University Hospital in Sydney has a unit of specialist plastic surgeons and occupational therapists and general surgeons and lots of other people, whereby they case by case can analyse what they're dealing with and construct a surgical plan that deals with the situation at hand. So, yeah, it is a difficult scenario, but if that patient's finding it hard, there are some centres which they can access.
Yeah, right. And the other two things you were going to talk about was the MONS and the bra backlift. So these are basically the four procedures, apart from like a tummy tuck, that someone would have usually as they've lost a lot of weight, hey?
Yeah, the MONS is something which... it's a problem for everyone who's gone through massive weight loss. Everyone that I see, it's an area where if you don't point it out, they're a little bit hesitant to bring it up. It's not that I don't ever strip all of the, like I don't get patients to completely undress, but when you're examining someone for a belt lipectomy, body lift or an abdominoplasty, I'll often ask or describe to them that I've got surgical plans that can take into account the degree of skin excess or fat excess in the MONS. And when you mention that to them and say, look, it's just, you know, I don't need to see everything, but just the upper part, it's surprising how many people comment about how it's a big concern to them. It's a point of embarrassment. And when you point out to them that it's something that can be addressed and incorporated into an abdominoplasty or a belt lipectomy, or it can be done as an independent procedure by itself after those operations or by itself and in its entirety, then it is something that people do want to openly talk about.
Yeah, well, it's really funny. I had a tummy tuck about 22 years ago after I had my 21 years ago after I had my son. And I, over the years, like I didn't even know there was such a thing as a MONS. And then over the years, I'd noticed more and more that I'd have jeans on and it looked like I had it looked like I had a penis, you know what I mean? Like I've had a big bulge at the front there. And that's what the MONS is. And
yes,
then,
it is.
Yeah. And then.
It is. And it's one of those things that it's surprising how many people don't bring it up. But when you do sort of mention, it's not that we ever want to sell an operation to someone, but certainly if you're going to do an abdominoplasty, or about lobectomy and you're commenting about where you are going to place the scar, then it is something where that area can potentially be addressed. So I bring it up as a matter of routine, of course, where I just say, you know, are there concerns in this particular area? It will help me determine where I place my scar. And it often starts a conversation about how it's a concern to that individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing that it wasn't actually, well, I presume years ago it probably wasn't a thing, I'm thinking. And now it's kind of like a regular thing, because what you do for the Mons area is you just kind of liposuction it, don't you? Is that right?
Your liposuction? It really depends. I mean, liposuction is one procedure that you can definitely do. It's actually quite a useful thing, liposuction, and it can be very useful to deal with residual edema or swelling in the Mons area, which can occur after some abdominoplasties. The liposuction can be pretty sore, and liposuction, like liposuction in anywhere, can leave loose skin. And depending on what the situation is, if you've got someone with massive weight loss who has previously had a very full Mons area with a lot of extra skin, liposuction alone is just not going to be enough. So you've got to cut out a bit of skin, and then you need to think about, okay, how I cut it out, but then how I reposition that Mons back into the area, because it actually is a functional structure. It is a fat pad that sits on top of the pubic bone, and that is necessary in terms of protecting oneself when it comes to intercourse and stuff like that. You do need a little bit of tissue there. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to think about how much you cut out, how much fat you cut out, how much skin, but then how you reposition some of those tissues onto that bone area so that they've still got a degree of comfort. Mm-hmm. And a nice appearance. Yeah. So, yeah, there is a bit of work when it comes to working out what needs to be done to a Mons, and it's often in my hands an open procedure, not just liposuction.
Yeah, right. And the other one I was going to ask you about was the back bra lift, because I saw this being done a few weeks ago, and it was like I've seen her afterwards, and the results are amazing. So for anyone who's lost a lot of weight, you know, you get those back rolls, you know, as you lose or put on weight, you get those back rolls. So just all of that's just gone. Can you explain that procedure? Because that one to me is like, whoa, like amazing.
Yeah. It's a great operation. And you're right. Patients present, they've lost lots of weight. They have a priority list of concerns. It's usually the abdomen and the breasts, and then it's the arms and the thighs. And occasionally, once someone's been through a bit, or if they know about this one, they'll bring it up. And it's all to do with that loose skin that's been stretched up, and it's all adherent to the ribs and to the scapulae, which are the scapulas, which are the shoulder blades. It sits and it hangs over bras. It forms those rolls that sort of sits around where clothing is, and a lot of them really dislike it. So the back bra lift was designed to just get rid of all of that. You can design the scar to sit in and around where the bra strap would normally try and sit. You can cut out all that loose skin and resuspend it up onto the upper back, and that tidies up the sort of mid-back region, which if you've gone and had a belt lipectomy, for example, that sort of pulls things up from the lower part and gets rid of all that sort of excess skin down low. But the upper skin is still hanging off the ribs. You just can't change that. So you've got to sort of pull it up into a back bra lift. So it deals with that mid-back skin excess. And then you can extend the cut around into the armpits and actually blend the scar into the crease that's the natural crease for the breast. And by that, you can tidy up the side skin and the armpits. You can tidy up the skin that's all around the shoulder blades, the middle back, everything. It is a good procedure that makes quite a significant change, and it's one that tends to be further down the line. I do it quite often with breast reductions and breast lifts in people that have previously had potentially an abdominoplasty years ago, and they'll come wanting a breast procedure, and then they'll comment about the armpit and the upper back tissue excess. So you can essentially do a belt-like pectomy type, like a circumferential procedure around the chest, the upper chest, and tidy up everything in that zone as well.
Wow. I have to admit, that's one of the – I mean, I've seen a lower body lift, but the bra back lift procedure, like the before and afters, can be phenomenal. And I think when I first saw it, I was like, oh, my God, that's freaky. But it actually wasn't as scary as it was. And I thought, oh, what about – you know, when you lie down, how do you move up? And, you know, recovery I thought might be an issue, but it actually didn't seem to be as bad as what I would have thought.
Yeah, I haven't seen – I did this operation on a lady, would have been 3-4 weeks ago now, and I've seen her come through recovery a few times in the rooms, and she had that procedure in conjunction with a few other things, and I don't ever see that one as being a particularly uncomfortable or difficult procedure to recover from. The tissues that we're mobilizing, the way that you secure them, they're still quite functional, and it's an area of the body which doesn't sort of have the big extremes of around the hip area where you bend your thighs with sitting and standing. The upper back, up there, it sort of stretches side to side, but it's very hard to actually do anything which really puts a lot of tension on the wounds unless you get too physical or you make things too tight. It seems to be one that people recover pretty well from.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised because, like, all of those procedures, you know, sort of like freak me out a little bit, but the more I see them being done, the more I'm like, oh, okay, you know, maybe it wasn't as bad as what I thought. But I know that, can you tell us which of those what combination stuff would you do? Because, like, let's just talk massive weight loss patients now at the moment, and, like, I'm definitely one of those people that just wants to have one thing done at a time, get over it, and then, you know, do the next thing, you know, ages later. But I know that you're amazing at doing combination surgeries because I've seen and spoken to people that you've actually done it with. But can you give me some ideas of what, like, say, a massive weight loss patient, what a combo kind of could be for them?
It's really common to do the breasts and the abdomen together, whether that be abdomen alone or a belt lipectomy with the breasts. It's common to do arms with thighs. It's common to do little revisionary things with arms and thighs, or arms alone or thighs alone. So dealing with armpit skin excess after a brachioplasty or a breast reduction lift where you've still got a little bit of residual tissue in that area, or dealing with a little bit of Mons excess that can sometimes still be present even despite doing a Mons lift as part of an abdominoplasty or belt lipectomy. So there's little tidy up things like that that can be done in combination. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier the breast lift or reduction or an orgmasto with a back bra lift. So essentially doing that circumferential type thing up the top, doing a breast reduction lift orgmasto with arms is a common thing where someone might have already had abdominoplasty and they just want now the top done. The thighs are often...
The material provided in this podcast is general information and does not constitute medical advice, nor is it a substitute for consultation and advice from your own practitioner. It should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical illness. Any medical or surgical decision should be made in consultation with your own doctor or practitioner and not based on the materials provided in this podcast.